Welcome to the Technoid Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Gatoon. Today's show is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. Go beyond email marketing with true automation by signing up at activecampaign.com/technoid. Get your first two months, for free on me. If you receive most of our newsletters and marketing information, you know that we use ActiveCampaign. I'm a huge supporter of the company, and obviously the story. Jason, the CEO and founder, has been a guest on the show many times, so check that episode out. Today, we're talking to Havoc Shield and Brian Fritton. Brian, first off, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
So I have to tell you, we went through this period of time, I don't know, maybe 2 years ago, 3 years ago. It was coming off of one of the last showcase events we did that was featuring security. I know you know Darren Wall from Keeper Security, Darren Guccione. He's been on the show a bunch of times. I remember in that conversation, the first one with him, talking about, this is an unsexy topic. This is going to be one of those things where you have to like button up and dig in to try to follow what we're saying. In the last 3 years, that conversation has become so common and mainstream, and people are so accustomed to opening up notifications in their apps, notifications from their banks. If you use Equifax, if you use Experian, any of these things, and Sony, PlayStation, all these people have had breaches of some shape or form. And there's a million different reasons why. Some cases it's a hack. Sometimes it's people literally taking, possession and holding them hostage. And other times it's something as stupid as an employee at home having his internet basically tapped or having his email, you know, fissured or whatever. And yeah. it's a ubiquitous problem now. And so when we have this conversation, thankfully, I feel like we could have a very common person, layman conversation, and people will now understand what Darren and I were trying to press so hard a couple of years ago. So I'm really excited to learn from you what you guys are doing, and maybe even share with the audience just like how massively important it is as things continue to go down the digital world that we live in.
Yeah. And Darren and those folks at Keeper are awesome. So listen to the conversation in the past. You know, the reality of this is it's not slowing down, right? And that plain language is absolutely necessary now. Being able to understand what you're up against is huge. And that's like, it's a big part of it. Just getting through all of the jargon and technical speak and all of the sort of places where you're kind of not invited because it's only for security folks is big, right? You know, the reality is that there's about a 50% chance as you as a small business, you're going to get attacked as well. Gartner, Forrester, you know, the Poneman Institute, all these folks put it somewhere between like 43 and above 50% that a company with less than 500 employees is going to get attacked and within the year. So the likelihood is there. But the problem also, you know, beyond that is actually quite scary. And it's why, you know, we started Havoc Shield is, you know, if a small business gets attacked, a startup gets attacked, especially right now, you know, the financial and reputational impacts of that are just so great, so much greater than it is in a lot of cases for large businesses that kind of have this stuff buttoned up. And it can be a company ending event, right? And then you kind of pair that day to day with the inability to kind of peer in and see what's going on inside your systems without the right tools. You can't win large customers because, you know, they're sticking you with these large security questionnaires that you don't know how to get around. You know, it's starting to cause problems, not only in that financial and reputational end, but also in the ability to actually recognize revenue. So it's huge. And there's this 3.5 million person cybersecurity job gap out there, right? Like even in the pandemic, finding security people that know how to do this is really, really tough. And if you can find them, you know, it's likely you can't afford them. So it's really this sort of rock and a hard place.
Yeah. I mean, listen, let's talk a little bit about, like, I guess I should say, I split this audience who listens to this show into two. There's the you and I, the, you know, Joe and Jane hanging out, playing on Instagram. And then there's the founders who are part of that, who are kind of both of those people. Yeah. I used to spend a lot of time working with founders and mentoring them and explaining to them, this is like going back to 2013, explaining to them that they're not in a position, no matter how ready they think they are, to do business with big corp, to do enterprise level business when they have security lapses and huge risk profiles. that they just, you know, and I understand they can't afford to fix it, but unless the business is built to do business with big enterprise, like I'll just give an example. I mean, I work with Salesforce all the time and we have to onboard for a different vendor all the time with them. For whatever reason, they are set up so that every single thing you do business with them is a new vendor.
Yeah.
And they make you fill out a pretty comprehensive form. And depending on the number of employees you have, that opens the conversation up into further diligence on their end. And people like, oh, it's because you're alienating small business. Like, no, it's not. It's because I need to make sure that the gazillions of other businesses that I represent on this side do not become potentially open to your heirs.
Yep.
And I think that's a piece of this conversation that while we should definitely spend time talking about the impact of security breaches so that the general person is aware to look for this. But for the startup founders themselves, this is becoming a fundamental infrastructural piece that is expected of them to do business. Yeah. And in a lot of cases that even impacts like they're raising money, like it should be in your, you know, use of proceeds. Like in my use of proceeds, I'm going to dedicate X dollars to make sure that our security is buttoned up. Because as you put it, one slip up, one mistake, one dude with a thumb drive hanging out in a parking lot, I don't know what he's doing there, but whatever, loses the thumb drive, the whole business is poof, gone.
Yeah, totally. I mean, the large company responsibilities are there for a reason, right? As you said, they correctly see small businesses as an attack vector, right? Because that's how it happens most of the time, right? Like the Target breach was through an HVAC company, right? That got breached. You know, they've got these questionnaires that are developed by professionals, and the disconnect there is the amount of homework that you have to do that's just not familiar with for, you know, IT technical people who kind of get given this like stewardship job over cybersecurity, but, you know, don't really have any of the skills. And so trying to do this on your own is pretty tough. And then, yeah, when it comes to investors and getting acquired, all of these things, you know, like they're now inserting cybersecurity diligence into the conversation sooner and more, you know, strictly than they ever have before. And so, you know, I just raised a round of funding. If you want to get a round of funding in most places now, you're going to get some questions about this, just like you're going to get questions about your financial viability and your projections and things like that. So it's changed in recent years from just the, you know, react to, you know, possible threats as they happen and tackle those to, you need to be proactive about this because you're not going to win, you know, revenue because of it.
Oh, 100%. And I think it's a good segue then into exactly what you guys are doing and why it is important for founders to have a resource like Havoc Shield to go through.
Yeah. I mean, so the reason why we started Havoc Shield, I'll just kind of like rewind and talk about the origin of this because it's really a personal pain story. You know,
we love those, by the way. My favorite story is, oh man, my life fell apart and here's how I fixed it.
Yeah, well, you can still see the dark circles under my eyes. So the pain's still there. I'm a software engineer by trade, worked on both sides of the consulting product development industry here in Chicago for a while. The last business I started was a real estate crowdfunding business called Patch of Land. You know, we sort of took that equity crowdfunding idea of, you know, investing fractionally in large projects and applied that to real estate. You know, had some good success with that. And because of it, you know, we were getting poked a lot. You know, we were passing a couple of $1 million to the wire every day. We had a lot of, you know, investor information. And, you know, attackers know this. Like they've got tools that they can go and they can kind of scour the various websites very efficiently and quickly and understand, you know, how to prioritize targets and what exploits they can use to kind of get at you. And I was always like the kid who learned how to pick locks really early as a kid. You know, I would draw a little like alarm systems on cardboard. My parents weren't allowed in other rooms unless they typed the right code in, you know, that type of thing. But, you know, I never held a specific, you know, professional cybersecurity role, right? Just technical enough. And so at Patch of Land, we got poked a few times and we put up, you know, various, you know, systems in reaction to that. But I always kind of felt, you know, like I didn't really know if we were going to get attacked or if we would know when we would get attacked, what to do about it. You know, we were just kind of like throwing up a couple of walls and not knowing if they're still going to walk around or not. And Havoc Shield came out of, you know, my next job after that, right? So moved back from Los Angeles where I had moved to Patch of Land, to Chicago, missed public transportation. Obviously not taking a whole lot these days, but glad to be back in Chicago, and took what I thought was going to be a break from startups for a little while, and ended up, working really hard as the VP of engineering at Civis Analytics here in Chicago. You know, they make data science software for large enterprises that have these types of security questionnaires every day. And then they host, the strategy hubs for, 9 out of every 10 progressive Democratic political campaigns. So I inherited IT and got put in charge of cybersecurity in front of the 2018 midterm elections. And, I had a little bit of help, but, we didn't have a whole lot of folks on staff who really knew how to do this from A to Z. And so when I went out to search for, how to build something that was really professional in cybersecurity programming, I found two things. The first was these compliance frameworks that, with your work from Salesforce, you're probably familiar with NIST and CIS, things like that. But they're really meant for larger companies with dedicated staff. And for us, like 120 person company at the time, just gave us more homework that we didn't know how to do, couldn't translate. And on the other side, it was literally like top 10 cookie cutter blog posts that just say, choose a strong password and you'll be fine. Obviously that didn't really do it for us. What we did at Civis is we built things from plan all the way through proof to try to make ourselves the experts and kind of do it in house, because we couldn't find security staff quick enough to help us. And that what we did there kind of became the rough draft for Havoc Shield. And it's everything right from that plan through proof. It's what do I do? What are the top 10 next things I need to worry about given my threat model? All the way through, showing these reports to my customers and to my board and to my investors and things like that. But the most important piece is that middle, is that how do I do it? And that's where I think we specialize, is being able to get prepared for something like a ransomware attack. It's like, okay, how do I enable backups across my fleet and encrypt those? And how do I create a policy that makes sure that, people know what they're responsible for, and how do I train my staff to look out for these things? And so that middle part, we really focus on doing the homework. So you can think of it kind of like what TurboTax did for tax prep, we've done for startup cybersecurity.
So, I can't even begin to process the learning curve for most founders. Like, there isn't really, you talked about a little bit with Civis, like there isn't really a preparatory course for this, because you basically only search the relative things you know.
Yeah.
And cybersecurity, like 90% of it exists in a dark web, where if you're a normal person who's not picking locks and creating gateways for your parents in the house, you wouldn't even know where to start and like what questions to ask. So, I think it's similar to a regular person who, they start a side gig flipping houses on, during the summer, and they go to tax time and they're like, shit, wait, I owe what? And like the impact of this on my total amount of money I came in this year just put me into a new bracket. And I didn't write off any of this. I didn't keep receipts. They don't even know what to ask or look for.
Yeah.
And so the more sophisticated your model is, that it enables them to back walk into things, I think is huge. So the question to me, I guess, comes into like, how do you get these founders' attention? How does it price up? How do you help them understand the financial piece around it? Because, like yourself and your previous companies, and I'm sure even with Havoc Shield, obviously, I imagine you take security more seriously than most, but you only have so much money and you only have so many people, and the people that would work on this kind of stuff are going to be paid. They're not people that are taking equity and, working on the side or whatever. So yeah. As you start to get into like 20 people, 100 people, it'll look like clear cover, raising a bunch of money and growing really quickly, this is overlooked. And they also are trying to like kind of manage that timeline. And so any money that's getting spent on something, that it's sort of this cost savings metrics, like you talk about it in sales a lot. If all we generate here is savings or potential loss of risk, that's the first thing cut, except for if you cut it, you're screwed.
Right.
So I'm just curious how you go about like actually selling this into companies and having them understand the importance.
Yeah. So we express everything as jobs. I'm a big proponent of this framework called Jobs to be Done, invented by Clay Christensen, one big management thinker, yep, alongside one of my mentors, Bob Mesta. And you know, it kind of gets down to like, what are people really trying to do when they hire a product like Havoc Shield? One of those jobs is to win a large customer, right? Like, they don't want to do cybersecurity. They don't want to, you know, install antivirus and, you know, do all of this policy management stuff, but they do want to win a large $250K deal. And so we have a couple of direct ways of getting in front of people, but the one that we're working on pretty hard right now is actually being helpful to both sides of the transaction when someone's trying to win a large customer. We've already helped our customers win deals with, you know, Fortune 10 companies, which is awesome. You know, like, they generate our letter on the other end of this platform, and we see people winning these deals because of the work that we've done with them, which is super rewarding. Like, my mission is to protect founders and support them, and that's awesome to see. So, you know, seeing that, we said, you know, there's something here, and we started interviewing you know, like, the compliance folks at large companies, and pretty universally, they're like, not super well liked inside their companies, because they're the people who say no a whole lot, and they kind of hold up the deals with, you know, folks in marketing or tech or who whatnot that want to work with small businesses. And you know, the struggle there is, you know, these small vendors, like we've been talking about, don't have everything buttoned up a lot of times. And so, you know, they're kind of stuck in this between a rock and a hard place, trying to get the small vendor to move and trying to, you know, decrease the risk of the company. And so we approached those types of folks and said, hey, you know, we've got this catalog of capabilities, you know, all of the things that you want them to do. We can map that catalog, you know, making sure that they have policies, that they train their staff, that they, you know, use multi-factor authentication, things like that. We can map that to what, you know, you want them specifically to do. And then we can actually show them how to do it, right? So that it's not this like email back and forth, this is what I mean, this is what that jargon is, and these are the priorities. You know, they get these small vendors get a portal where they go and they see exactly what it means. And then if they need help doing it, you know, we're walking them through rolling out Keeper password, you know, manager, if they don't have one, we're showing them and giving them the ability to patch their software correctly. And then at the end of the day, you know, they've got basically just a letter that's already underwritten by that large company that they can pass, and then the deal's done. So that works for us because, you know, we're seeing the volume come from these large companies by being put in front of small businesses when they have revenue to lose if they don't do a good job. We do that, and then we generally just be helpful, right? So we do a lot of how-to stuff. We do a lot of workshops and webinars, and we try to put ourselves in these places, you know, where this is absolutely needed. You know, affinity groups like, you know, TechNexus, or the niche groups like, you know, accounting types of professional groups, places where they're holding a lot of personal sensitive information, and we can kind of give them some freebies and then say, you know what, like, the whole program is here for the taking. And, you know, it's a service that I think is a no-brainer when it comes to price. So, you know, this is something you can put on the credit card, and it's simple. It's $10 a user per month, and that's it, right? So you get everything in that. So we try to make it easy to say yes, rather than having to kind of do that, you know, man, I don't know, should I afford this to, you know, tamp down that risk or not? It's something that you decide to do. And I think the company's better off for doing, and it's not really hurting your pocketbook that much.
Yeah. I mean, it looks to me like it's almost when you're doing a math problem and they say, show me, this is the diligence behind it. This is sort of like, if I'm a big business and I ask you the question, what does your security process look like? And your answer is, let me talk and they come back with some kind of like scatterbrain thing. This is like, you can just be like, here's my work. Like,
yep.
This is what we do, which seems to make a lot of sense. And I think you talk to any, well, I was going to say founders, really anyone in business, we can all get on the phone and hammer out a deal fast as shit. It's the paperwork. And the diligence and the questions and the preparedness. And can you give me an IO and an SOW? And can you get this signed off? And can you show me this and this and this and this and credentials and so forth, certifications? It's that stuff that kills it. So if you can check the box and have this sort of what we call like a data center, that anytime I have a new customer, it's just like, here's everything I have, like checks the box or doesn't. I think it's a huge win for everyone. So I want to pivot this conversation into sort of the future a little bit. All of this was massively important 3 years ago, 2 years ago, 1 year ago, today. The future of this, and I don't even mean just security. I mean, like this conversation, like being prepared, generally speaking, not just about security. We're moving into a remote world with COVID. Obviously, we've accelerated that tremendously. We were heading this way anyway, but all the old stodgy folks out there who are like, I'll never fucking do a deal without meeting in person. Like those people are now like, oh, I could use Zoom, be home by 4, dinner time. Not making fun of my older listeners, but I am. So like we've moved into this pace now where like everything else, the rest of the world we live in and work with just sort of facilitates more change and picks up speed. You look at, you know, Grubhub, you know, you would see go down the street, you know, 9 months ago, every restaurant on the street, they're either Grubhub or they're DoorDash or they're nothing, or there's some random shit you've never heard of. Now they all have everything. They're on everything. They have their own services. Like I actually think there's a disruptor coming in the Grubhub world of restaurants basically teaming together locally and just being like, we're just serving local, fuck Grubhub.
Yeah.
Because they've evolved and recognized the changes aren't going to go backwards. This same thing is to be said for business in general. We're all going to be moving remotely. We're all going to be sending, you know, things via Dropbox and secured links and email links and two-factor authentication and all this kind of stuff. Blockchain is coming even more for other people and contracts and so forth. What will happen is the facilitation of speed. People are going to start building tools just like they used to do with apps to try to be able to get you to do this even quicker. So if you're a business and you're not leaning forward to this, you're in trouble. And so I would love to just get your take on this, like how you see the evolution of security in particular playing a central role and being sort of like the, hey, we can't move quite that fast just yet. We have to be able to do this securely. And you know, you're seeing it was Zoom certainly experienced it in the first couple of months.
Yeah, man, I did not want to be on the Zoom team for those couple of months, but yeah, I think they did a good job.
I guess it helps when you're on the board and you're like doing your quarterly and you're like, so here's the bad news.
Right.
We had security breaches like you can't believe. Here's the good news. We have 1 billion new users.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess good problems and bad problems, and they had more good problems. Yeah, I think when it comes to security, you know, we actually took a pause when everyone kind of went home in March because we were going through Techstars at the beginning of the year. And, you know, we were in person and we're supposed to stay in person until later in April, and everyone went home. And, you know, frankly, our pipeline dried up. So we were like, you know, we had the space and time to kind of figure out what our new context is. And what we saw and heard from people is like, there is this distinct need to pay more close attention to the nature of how people work from home and what they're working on. And what they're working on, whether you like it or not, is sometimes a personal device, right? Like the BYOD culture is here to stay. Your email's on their phone, and you know, a lot of companies don't have the types of resources necessary to kind of wrap the protection around that. And even if you do, it's on, you know, Comcast, it's on like Comcast network, you know, it's on a personal like Linksys $50 router that they bought from Best Buy. And all those things are never updated for the most case. And it's, you know, pretty ripe for technical attacks, but so, you know, there's attention needed there. And, a lot of the security industry tools are still focused on the sort of office perimeter in one way or another, right? Like office resources, office computers, things like that. And so there's transitions that need to be made there, and good companies that are doing that. The thing that worries me most, and I think needs the most attention though, is the people side of it. We have a situation right now where people are at home more frustrated than they have been. You know, if their parents, their kids are running around and coming in, you know, to the background on video calls, and they're trying to balance, you know, school and work and all that sort of stuff. And so they're distracted. And, you know, I think Darren said this when he was on your show a little while ago, like distracted people make more mistakes, right? It's and so we have to, I think, be willing to slow down to make sure that people get trained well, and that they have the resources necessary to say, you know what, this looks fishy. If I could give a tip or trick, it's just like, make sure to train your staff and make sure to show them how to report something. If something looks fishy, whether it's an email or the computer's doing something weird or whatever that might be. But I think there's also a lot of benefits about, you know, working from home now outside of security. Like, you have this ability now to create these big chunks of uninterrupted time and communicate more asynchronously. You know, I think that's a really awesome thing to do. I follow a lot of the ways that, you know, Jason Fried and the Basecamp folks work. And that's what a lot of companies are transitioning into as well, right? Is figuring out how to do remote work. And it's not just like, okay, recreate your office in Zoom. That doesn't work well. And so, yeah, lots of new scary things to worry about in cybersecurity, but also a lot of benefits, and to reap those benefits without, you know, getting attacked and possibly having your company end, because cybersecurity insurance only pays so much. You know, we've got to slow down a little bit and re-architect, and that takes a little bit of time.
Yeah, listen, I totally agree with you on the slowdown thing. It never happens, unfortunately. People just, you know, you get people who think, oh, we're agile, we're flexible, they can move quicker, take advantage of the market. And then of course they put everybody else at risk. But ironically, I just had Jason on my show and we were just talking about this. Like, he was talking about how to actually do email the right way through Hey. But one of the side conversations was like, listen, everything changes now. And I personally think it's for the better, but there's a lot of, you know, whether it's security or just in general productivity issues that we have to iron out, it's going to take a little time. But I guess the positive thing here is that it puts companies like Havoc Shield in a really good spot as far as like the green field ahead of you is absurd. Mm-hmm. Like, literally, it's, you know, spot. I even said this to Darren, he's crushing it, right? Like, keepers everywhere, they're doing so well.
Yep.
And yet, it's like the tip of the iceberg. Like, I don't even think we've been talking about the digital transformation, digital age for the last 20 years. I don't think we're in it yet, to be totally honest. I think the digital age is an age where literally everything is running asynchronously behind you and in front of you and on top of you. And it's, and like that to me is a digital age. And man, you guys are right there. Well, yeah. I guess that was metaphorical as well as literal. We could have things on top of us. I was also thinking of like layered AI, like Elon Musk is trying to do, and us using, you know, machine everything, machine learning and tooling and so forth. So when I stop and think about that, I can think of 10 or 12 like massive frailties in almost every like scenario that you put out there. And you actually do this for a living, so you'd probably see 100. Mm-hmm. And that's 100 things for every scenario that every person walking Earth has. And that, it's scary.
Yep, it is. And the thing that you said that we think about all the time is people can't slow down. And so as a company, we can't slow them down. Like, we can't put them in a position to choose whether they're going to work on security this week or whether they're going to work on something in the roadmap. And that's like a tough call, right? Obviously, you know, this stuff does take time. So when we think about how to architect what we're building, the content that we use, the steps that we take, even down to like the drip campaigns to remind people they have stuff to do, it's all like, how do I get out of people's way for the most part? And making sure that, you know, the platform is a place where it can be accretive to whatever they're already doing, right? So like one example is inserting, you know, security scans into your continuous deployment pipeline, right? For a software company. Like, you know, if that's something that you can press a few buttons and get an opinionated, you know, professional version of that, then that's great, right? Like, this is something that they're already trying to improve with tests and speed up their development time and all those types of things because of where we are and get things out faster. So if we can be there with a part of that, and they can kind of just say yes to it, then that's great. And I think we can do a good job doing that. But if, you know, they've got to rethink, how do I configure this? Which options should I choose? You know, who needs to own different parts of this? Then that's where, you know, you get into problems. And so we try really hard to, frankly, you know, be opinionated and choose like, you know, blue chip vendors or blue chip open source libraries that can be used. or build the things ourselves that are simple and easy to implement, and make sure that we're doing that at the right time. To your point, it's got to be done, and sooner rather than later, as all of these things kind of come, you know, to the left, to the right, above and below us, there's not really going to be any choice, because the next thing that's going to happen as we talk about the future is, you know, more people are going to get attacked. Regulations are going to follow, whether that's industry, state, federal, any type of licensed type of thing in healthcare or education has already got it. And you're going to have to do it, or you're going to be looking at fines. So being proactive right now and taking those bits and pieces on things that you're already working on and inserting security into your culture, you know, through some of these modules that we can support, then I think that's the way to go about it. Because if you don't, you're going to be behind and you're going to have to do it. And it's going to cost a whole lot of time and money, and you're not going to be able to continue working on your roadmap.
Oh, I totally agree with you on that. In fact, I guess this is that it's a great way to sum this up, because it's like the age old topic. Like, the more power you get, the more apps you get, the more things you have, the more you actually slow down. Like, we're moving super, super fast, but like every mistake is just gigantic. Yep. Because of the speed. So you have to go back in time to fix it. And you end up, it's like every business productivity app I've ever used, in theory, great. As soon as I start using it bundled in other ones, then I'm actually slower than if I just have my pencil and paper, which I think is ironic that I'm like run this tech thing, but at the same time, I'm like the most analog user of all time.
Hey, I know most people, they're going to look at the podcast, but I got a whole clipboard with like 50 sheets of paper here. Workflow makes sense.
It's funny, but this has been super informative, really interesting conversation, Brian. I think it's a huge topic that people are paying more attention to, but I do think that they need to still pay more attention to it. And I think that they need to look at it maybe in a framework that's not just about risk. And it's also about just business advancement and what this enables them to do. So I appreciate you taking the time to share it with us. Havocshield.com is where people can go and check it out and sign up and contact you guys. For everyone listening to this show, as you know, you can sign up for my newsletter by going to katoon.com or technori.com and find the newsletter, sign up right there. Follow me or Technori at Katoon or at Technori. And hopefully everyone here listens to this podcast and checks out Havocshield. Boom. That's a wrap.